Blog Radio. Anyone want coffee? Hello, fellow book writers and caffeine fiends. Welcome to A Daily Cup of Joe, where you'll get to hear from publishing industry pros and affirm your inner bookworm.
Welcome, everybody, to the Wednesday edition of A Daily Cup of Joe. Wednesdays are discussions with attendees of Utopia who've had revelations while at the conference. As writers who've been moved by the event to do more, be more, and accomplish things they never considered before attending. I'm Joe Michaels of the Joe Michaels blog, and I'll be your host for today. I'm excited to have Allison Gottlieb as my guest. Her first year attending Utopia was 2014. Allison is a young adult author with a number of titles under her belt, Darkest Legacy and Finding North, to name a couple. She's currently attending college on the East Coast, but she hails from sunny California and runs an Athena Interior Book Design. We'll discuss Allison's book and ask her what she took away from her first year at the conference. I know you're all super excited to meet her, so grab a cup of Joe, relax, and let's get to it. How are you, Allison?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me, Joe. I'm really excited to be here, and nice to hear your voice again. So I'm happy to be here and happy to talk with you.
Oh, yes. It was so amazing to meet you last year. You were just so full of energy and bubbly. Everybody who met you said, oh, my gosh, she's just so sweet. So thanks for coming.
Aw, that's really sweet. I don't know, not all of them were saying that to my face, so it's nice to know that people were talking about me, I guess. At least it was all good.
They were totally talking about you in a good way, yeah. It was nothing bad, I promise. So I'm just going to jump right into my questions here. Any revelations that you had while you were at Utopia, like what – epiphanies basically were on your mind whenever you left the conference?
Well, so I attended in 2014 and I really, 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 really loved it. Like, I had to fight with my family a little bit to get there because they wanted to go on a vacation at the same time. And I was like, but I was determined that I was going to do this. And I managed to pay for it, but I kind of got lucky. And so then, but I got there and I was like, this is, like what everyone says, this is my tribe, these are my people, this is where I'm home. And it was just like a vacation for my soul. I learned a whole lot about writing and got so many ideas and for marketing and publishing and met people and networking and just had fun meeting other people who are obsessed with the same kind of things that I am. It was just really reaffirming. So then I was dying to go back in 2015, of course, but I just couldn't afford it. And I was so bummed when I realized that I couldn't afford it. And then I was looking at everybody's pictures on Facebook, because I'm still friends with everybody on Facebook, and like during the conference weekend my Facebook was just filled with everyone's pictures, and I was so upset that I couldn't be there, and I was like jealously wishing I could Photoshop myself in, but I'm not that good with Photoshop. So then I decided that there is absolutely no way I'm not making it to 2016. So right now I have two different jobs over the summer. I'm making a lot of money, for me at least, because I'm not qualified for anything more than minimum wage yet, but working two different jobs at two different ice cream places, very summer thing to do, and going to save the money and being like, have a note to self on my computer that keeps track of everything I spend and everything I earn, every bit of money that's coming in and going out, so I can keep track of what I'm earning and what I have to have by the end of the year to pay for everything. I'm going to be there next year, come hell or high water.
That's good, because we so missed you this year. Everybody was like, is Allison Gottlieb not coming? And I was like,
aww.
She didn't come this year. So, yeah, we would be so excited to have you. So those revelations that you had about like writing and publishing, what did you learn and what did you like take away and put into action after the conference?
Well, I learned a whole lot about series marketing and all of the stuff about permafreeze and stuff that always seemed a little bit daunting at first. But definitely like hearing so many people's experiences, like Eva Poehler's ridiculous experience with without hearing how many books she sells a day now, and it's like, wow, I want to do that someday. I'm not as fast of a writer as she is, so it's going to take me a little bit longer, but, and I don't know, it's been over a year since I went to a panel, sadly, so I don't know that I really remember things so much as, like, meeting people. Like, I got to meet the fabulous Casey Bond in person, and then a couple months later, we did a joint release party. I know, I'm so sad. I should try and talk to her on the phone or something, just because I miss her little voice, too.
Oh, yeah, she was fabulous. Her serial series won Best Serial Series at the awards this year. She completely freaked out.
I know.
You should have seen her face.
Oh, my God. I know, I saw some pictures. That was awesome. I really wish I could have been there in person to see that, because, like, I'm so happy for her, because, like, she works so hard. She is such a great promoter of other people, and she definitely, definitely deserves it.
Yeah, she was, like I said, you should have seen her face. It was just unbelievable. She sat there and, like, stared at me, and I was like, you won? And she was like, oh, my goodness. That was funny. You definitely would have gotten a kick out of it. Yeah. Okay, so since you can't remember the specific event during the conference that caused you to have your epiphany, how did Utopia change your writing career for the better? Did it change the way you look at things? Did it change the way you publish? What kind of effect did it have?
It definitely opened up sort of my pool of author friends that can help, that I can rely on to help me promote things and vice versa, which was great, because before that I basically just had my best friend Cassandra Cush, who we both decided to self-publish around the same time. And she's actually the one who found Utopia, because her cover designer was posting about it all the time before the 2013 conference. So then the two of us, because we were too late to get into 2013, we were like, together we were saving up and waiting for the 2014 one, looking forward to it together. But, like, after that, I got to know so many other people besides just Cassandra, and it was, like, so many great beta readers for Finding North, and I managed to ask people about cover designers besides Cassandra's one, who I've been drooling over forever but probably will not be able to afford for a really long time. And just, it's just knowing that there's a whole community of people out there that are just like me, even though I live really far away from most of them, like, just being there for a weekend and soaking up all that love, it was very, very much something I needed at that point in my life.
I think we all need that at some point, to be with your people. Just, even if it's just once, that you just need to be there and have the hugs and meet those people in person, you know what I mean? It's so much easier to PM somebody and say, hey, would you mind helping me with this, if you know them and you've helped them and, you know, you've met them in person.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so my next question is probably one you hear often. How old were you when you published your first book?
I was 17. And for some reference for the people who don't know me, like Joe does, I'm 19 now. I always say that the first book was kind of like an exercise in getting into college, because I was trying to think of unique things that I could do on my college apps, because I didn't have too much extracurriculars or anything, because I just spend all my time writing. And then I got this idea for a little novella, which turned into Darkest Legacy. The first part of Darkest Legacy, the current iteration of Darkest Legacy that you can buy on Amazon, is like a whole bunch of little stories that I shoved together because I realized that they were too tiny to sell apart anymore. But, and so I also happened to have met Cassandra at the same time, and she was getting ready to self-publish after trying to get her series, The Fallen Chronicles, traditionally published and getting rejections everywhere. And so I was like, wait a second. So I have this little story that is sort of perfect ebook size. Why don't I just self-publish it, and then I can have something interesting to put in my college apps. And then Cassandra and I sort of delved into the world of self-publishing more, met people, found the Utopia community. And then, so then by the time I had gotten into college and we had finished off all the little pieces in the Darkest Legacy world that I ended up writing, I had learned so much about the publishing industry that I decided that for now, at least, self-publishing is where I want to be and not traditional publishing.
Well, who can blame you there? The self-publishing community is awesome.
Yeah, that was definitely a part of it too, especially after Utopia.
Oh yeah, I mean, the people that you meet, you probably wouldn't meet if you were traditionally published because you just don't have that same kind of exposure. It's a fact. So how did the unique college application work out for you?
Well, I got into my dream school with a good scholarship, although I don't necessarily know that the scholarship had anything to do with the self-publishing. But actually, it was really cool. I still remember now in orientation, the dean of students or something, maybe she wasn't the dean, maybe she was just somebody who works in admissions, but she was reading off a couple of like cool accomplishments that people in our class had done to say like, oh, you're surrounded by so many cool people, and they're like, someone made a film that went to Cannes, someone's like climbed Mount Everest, or I don't know if it was Mount Everest, but it was some kind of climbing thing with that someone, and then she was like, someone has self-published a novella, and I was like, that's me.
Moment of pride, and I have to peacock here for a minute because that was awesome and it was a lot of work, right?
I get it.
So I know that you have your Athena interior book design. For everybody listening, the link to that website is actually in the show description, so go give it a visit and check out Allison's work. What sparked it and how's it doing?
Well, so I learned how to do formatting for my own books because I couldn't afford to pay a formatter because, yeah, college student budget is shoestring already. And then when you had publishing, it gets even tinier. So I taught myself how to do ebook formatting at first, and then I taught myself how to do print when I published my first full-length novel that I did in print, which was Finding North. And I learned a little bit about fonts at that point, about font. Like interior font kind of stuff from a club at school, which is actually called Emerson Students for Undergrad Students for Publishing, which is shortened as Pub Club, so it's sort of functions like a mini publishing house, so that's really cool. That's why I love my school. So I learned a little bit about that at this point, and so I played around with that a bit for Finding North. And then I was answering a question about it was Stormy Smith on the Utopia Facebook group was asking some questions about formatting, and I was answering them as best as I could because she was trying to find a new formatter or deciding whether or not she should do it herself because for her book two, because the guy who did book one had just raised his prices. And so then she messaged me and asked me some more questions, and I was answering them, and I said, well, you know, I could just do it for you if you want. And I was offering to do it. I was basically, at that point, I was going to offer to do it for free. But then she said, oh, sure, and here, how much could I pay? Like, this is what I think I could do. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I could totally do that. And then it just sort of, from there, I don't know, I was talking to Nadej Richards, who also owns Inkstain and is also in my position. She's also just finished her freshman year of college. But, she has so much more experience under her belt. But, like, hearing her talk about how she has paid for so many things with her Inkstain money, and it's like, wow, like, I don't think I could do quite what you do, but maybe I could do something kind of different and kind of my own thing. And so basically the way I run Athena Interior is it's a set your own price kind of model. So with only a few exceptions, if you tell me what you can afford for this project, I'll probably be able to work with you for that. And I just do really simple stuff, nothing at all like the crazy artistry of Nadej. So if you want really cool art stuff, go to someone like her, or even you have some kind of a formatting thing on your Indie Books Gone Wild website, but I don't do any kind of art stuff like you guys can do. Maybe I'll get there eventually. Hopefully I'll get there eventually. But right now I just do really clean, simple stuff, add a little bit of fancy font flair if you want, and I work whatever price you can afford. And it works because, I mean, I'm a college student. My time isn't worth as much as other people's, so I can afford to work for these little bits of money here and there, because the little bits of money here and there really do help sometimes.
Right. It's awesome that you're kind of grasping your dream and, like, just going for it, and you found a way to make it work because you had a skill that other people didn't or didn't want to take the time to learn, which, let's face it, we have so much we have to do anyway. I mean, if you can pay somebody else to do your book formatting, yeah, takes a huge burden off you.
Exactly. That's why I decided. That's why I had the idea to do it with the model, with the price model I have. Because I was like, well, my ideal client isn't somebody who wants like the really fancy art stuff because I can't do it. It's somebody who would have like otherwise decided to try and teach themselves, but maybe doesn't really have the time for that because maybe they have a day job and maybe they have to take care of the kids and they already have a hard time finding time to write. And so I will just do it for you. I will do the formatting for you because I had to teach myself and take something off of your mind.
Right. It's totally a needed service, I'll tell you that for sure. So tell us a little bit about Finding North. You mentioned it a few minutes ago. What's it about? Where is it set? Is it contemporary? Is it fantasy? Hit us with some details.
Finding North is my NA dystopian series. It is kind of my baby in a lot of ways. I've had this idea for a long time, and I was actually working on something else after I finished Darkest Legacy with the intention of publishing, and then about halfway through the project, I realized this isn't where my heart is. My heart is with the Compass series. So I stopped that. It was kind of awkward because I sort of made announcements to the about publishing this other thing, and I just had to say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be publishing that after all. But I got, and then I turned all my energy into the Compass series. It is, so it's a dystopian series, but I've gotten a lot of feedback saying it's more like a romance with the dystopian setting, which I guess, I mean, that's good to know if that's what you're looking for, and if you're not, then stay away. But, I don't know, I think that part of that might also be that because book one focuses a lot on the romance because that's sort of where the characters had to be in order to get them where they need to be to go out and be more focused on fixing the world aspect of a dystopian. But so there, it's set in a post-apocalyptic future. The apocalyptic event was this virus that wiped out like 90% of the population. So society as we know it in, or like American society as we know it, crumbled. The government is basically fell apart. And a new government that's mostly like the old one, called the Restoration Alliance, formed up. But then there's this guy named Alistair Caverly, who really got screwed over by the systems we had in the old, in the so-called old world. And he wants to really change things. So there's sort of a civil war going on between the Alliance's forces and Alistair's. They're mostly a stalemate because it's sort of like Alistair took a whole bunch of states with him when he left the Union, or what's left of the Union. The Alliance wants them back. So they're at war, but it's not like actively killing each other every day because otherwise nobody would still be alive to fight. But they're definitely at war. There's definitely hostility between the sides. And that's where we pick up with our main characters. Kat Zova is a medic for the Alliance. She came from Ohio, and she joined up with her high school sweetheart, who is recently deceased, as we pick up the story. So she's got a lot of scars and struggling to deal with that. And then she gets captured by Alistair's forces, who this particular group is being led by his son, Raynan. And Kat is the only female in her unit, and Raynan takes an interest in her. And so instead of sending her to military prison with the rest, he takes her home with him, which you could argue, depending on, well, he's a really good guy, so it's better off for her, but it's not necessarily too much better than prison in a lot of other ways. And home for Raynan is the Las Vegas Strip, which is really where this idea came from. I love the Las Vegas Strip. I was walking around there once, and I looked up at these huge buildings, and I was just like, wow, what would it be like if this was a dystopian world and all the people were gone, and there was just like a handful of people wandering around these massive buildings? Like, wouldn't that be so cool? And slowly the idea came from there. So book one is a lot more focused on the romance, I guess, because Raynan and Kat both have a lot of issues, and they're kind of learning to trust each other and slowly falling in love, and at the same time she's sort of opening his eyes to what's going on in the world, because he's not really a bad guy at all. He's just kind of oblivious when we start. So he's learning like what's going on, what's happening to people outside of his little bubble. And well, you can probably figure out where the story goes from there by the end of book one, and that I need to really get off my butt and work on book two already.
Well, hey, you're juggling writing, school, and formatting. I don't even know how you're doing it. I would be crazy. School alone took so many hours for me. I was just like, totally wiped out.
Oh, and I forgot to mention, because I have a promotion going on for in a couple days for Finding North. It's being featured on Read Cheaply, but it's already 99 cents. I brought the price down last night, and I just got the email saying that it's been changed everywhere. So if you were interested and you just heard my little spiel about it, you can go check it out. It's only 99 cents for the next couple of weeks.
On Amazon, folks, on Amazon. Okay, is there a particular song that you would correlate or put in there with Finding North, something that inspired it maybe? Or, like, I know that you had music and it was a big part of your writing process before whenever I did your last interview. And I'm just wondering if, like, mm-hmm. maybe you heard a song and it inspired part of the book, or was it just Vegas?
I don't know. I have a few songs that, I have a whole big playlist, but if I had to pick one song off of it that sort of, if you like, distilled the main sort of conflicts down into like one idea and then made that idea as a song, it would be Dust to Dust by the Civil Wars, which is this amazing, it's like, this really haunting. If you've ever heard anything from the Civil Wars, you know what I mean when I say it's kind of haunting. Like, this, it's not what you would expect for a dystopian. Like, I feel like you'd expect a dystopian playlist to be full of like action songs with bass and pumping and someone screaming, and I'm just like, no, this one fits like where the characters are. It's like about lonely people opening their hearts, which is what this one is about.
Oh, that's so sweet. You mentioned that it's new adult, and we all know new adult leaves a lot of room for, you know, stepping outside the clean genre type of young adult. So is your book more on the clean side, or does it have some of those steamier romantic scenes? Would you say it's definitely firmly new adult, or...
I would say it is new adult, but it's not, but it's like clean-ish new adult. First of all, in book one, the characters just aren't there yet. But in book two, there's some more moments like that. But I don't know. I just personally can't write the erotica level sex scenes because it makes me blush even while I'm by myself in my room with my computer. But I'm a really big believer in that new adult can be more than just the giant sex ball that it's been so far. And so I really try hard to brand my books as new adult, and with the caveat that it's not the intensely sexy new adult that you're used to. But because, I mean, I don't know, like, I am the new adult age range right now, and there's definitely a whole lot going on in my life and my friend's life that isn't just having sex with everybody. So it's definitely not the only thing that new adults think about.
Right.
So I definitely try.
I'm right there with you. I have a new adult series, the same thing. It's very clean. There's bad language, you know, because that's obviously an extremely tense situation. But, yeah, I don't go into any of that either. So I feel you. I would be blushing at my computer by myself if I were writing one. So I'm right there with you. Okay, we have about 6 minutes left, and I have one last question. I had read on Facebook a post that you made about respect for indie author publishing and indie publishing in general. What was that struggle, and how did you deal with it?
A post on my Facebook page about respect for I am struggling to remember this exact post.
It was about a conversation you were having with some of your classmates, and you said you were indie published, and you got the indie look, basically.
I remember this now, and I remember who this was. And this was my awful roommate who turned out to be even worse than, so she was just horrible. But she was also, it's funny, someone theorized to me that the reason she was so actively anti-indie is because she's also she's my same major. She's also a creative writing major, and she was feeling like threatened by the fact that I've published, so she felt the need to bash on indie publishing so that she could still feel superior to me. I don't know. She was horrible by the end, but I mean, there definitely is a little bit of, I definitely do feel the tension between myself and some of my classmates and teachers. Even my creative writing teacher was not active, not like anti, just publishing didn't really even enter the conversation there. It's more like genre fiction versus so-called literary fiction, and whether or not fantasy and dystopian kind of stuff has merit. And I'm just like, yes, it does. Does it? Just because it's not called quote unquote literary doesn't mean that there's nothing redeeming about it whatsoever. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I'll see how that goes as I continue into the more upper level classes, and whether or not it only gets worse or if it gets better. Hopefully it gets a little better than it was. But I think part of that post, and I'm remembering this now, is frustration with my ridiculously awful roommate.
Yeah, well, I mean, all you can really say is to anybody who thinks dystopian does not have a place in the world, hello, Suzanne Collins, okay? Hunger Games, Veronica Roth, you know, you can't really snub your nose at those women, and they created wonderful dystopian society. So kudos to them. But how did you deal with it personally? Like, how did it affect you in the beginning? And what were your feels is what I want to know.
I mean, it definitely hurt, and it was like disappointing because I published Finding North in the middle of second semester, so I was like expecting that my friends would be all excited about it, and they just seemed kind of apathetic. And it turned out that the people I was trying to celebrate with didn't actually think they were my friends, which is a whole nother can of worms. But I mean, it definitely hurts at first, and you can't, if you can invent a way to stop it from hurting, like, I will buy the shit out of that stuff, but I don't think it's possible to get over that sort of gut emotional feeling right in the moment. And I think that's sort of what the post was about, is that me trying to process that and, like, get rid of the gut emotional feelings and look for some support from the people who do support me. And remember why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Right. It's that indie stigma, isn't it? It kind of, whenever you tell people, oh, I published a book, and they kind of look at you and they're like, oh, did you self-publish that book? And you're kind of like, yeah.
and then they look at you and like, so you wrote the next 50 Shades? And it's like, oh, God, no. Nothing against that. Like, in principle, like, I mean, power to her and power to anyone who writes that kind of stuff. But I mean, we discussed, I blush when I write that kind of stuff. So not me, definitely not me. There are a whole lot more of us than just the ones that are writing erotica.
Right. But the last few years have seen the birth of the hybrid author who is traditionally published and indie published. And, you know, do you have to have validation as being traditionally published in order to indie publish? I don't think so. I think that indies have their place in this world. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So kudos to you for not giving up. Yes, I love it. So really quickly, what do you have planned for the next book in the Finding North series? Like, when can we expect to see that?
My goal is to be sure that it's out by next year's Utopia, which, because it goes along perfectly with the theme. But I don't know that I can promise anything more besides I'm going to try my very, very best to be done before June 2016, because I'm also writing something else right now that's a contemporary romance that sort of grabs my muse by the neck and is not letting go. So I'm also going to try and get that out by then, and two books plus college plus formatting is a lot going on, so I don't know.
Okay. So we'll definitely keep our eyes open for it.
Once I'm back working on Escaping East, which is the title of book 2, once I'm back working on that, like, full-time, I will definitely be updating people about that. I know I have people who are really excited to read book 2, and I feel bad letting them down, but at the same time, it's like, you gotta write what is speaking to you now, or you can just write crap on the other thing, and it's gonna be a waste of time.
Yep, you got it. All right, well, thank you so much for joining us today, Allison. Everybody, again, that was Finding North. It is going to be on sale on Amazon, so get on over there and pick it up. Thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciated it, and it was a wonderful talk.
Thank you so much, Joe. It was nice to talk to you again. I can't wait till I get to see you again, even though it's not going to be for another year.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, you have a great day, and thanks so much again.
Bye.